We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 1,510 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside Vince for this would be your first podcast where it's just the two of us. How are you, Vince?
I'm very well, Johnny. Yes. Yeah, this is our first, my verging podcast with you.
Well, I'm looking forward to all the things that we're going to discuss today. We were just going through everything in soundcheck, trying to get all the bugs worked out. You got a new system. How's it treating you?
Very good. It's I looked at buying an off-the-shelf computer, and then I just happened to go down to one of the computer shops in the city and said, I want to try and buy a computer with these specs. And they said, we can make one better for you. It took them a couple of weeks, but it's turned up, and it's fantastic. They delivered it. Oh, I picked it up, brought it home, set it all up. And then the girl rang me and said, oh, you've left the UPS behind. I said, you didn't tell me there was a UPS. She said, well, next time you saw that, I didn't even know there was a UPS included. So, yeah. Which is definitely needed here with all the power cuts we get.
Yeah. And you were talking about that. And I said, don't you guys have air conditioning out there? You turned it on and you said, yeah, you get brownouts. I'm like, oh, well, and they're talking about that over here now, too, because of, you know, all this reliable green energy that we're going to have.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? That first world countries are power sharing.
Yeah, and we're supposed to have digital IDs and digital currencies and QR codes and passports and all that stuff, but we're not supposed to have electric cars, but we're not going to have any electricity to use all this stuff.
Yeah, it's if a politician told me it got dark at night, I would stay up just to check, because I do not believe a word that comes out of pretty much 99% of their mouths.
Well, I tell you what, let's just start with your specialty. Let's talk about longevity, because this is one of the things that we wanted to kind of introduce into all this. And I'm glad that you came along, because I've been wanting to talk about health and wellness and do like health related stuff and content for a long time. And it's always been because of like the events of the day and COVID and everything else that's happened over the last few years. It's all been mixed into getting away from everything that's happened with pandemic has always been like getting away from the traditional ways of taking care of yourself and being reliant on big pharma. And yeah. It was all about listening to the experts, and which all turned out to be wrong, by the way. And we were just talking about Neil Ferguson in prep. It's important, and I've been saying since the beginning, it's important that people take control of their own lives in the matters of health and fitness and wellness. And you get into this longevity stuff, and I know some other people that are into it too. But I don't get into the whole like the thing you're wearing on your wrist, you know, that the tracking thing. I understand why you do it,
yes,
but yeah. I don't do any of that because of the, you know, the tracking implications and all that stuff. I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't trust companies, but I understand why you're doing it. But I'm really curious to get in there. What actually started you on this path? Why did you get interested in longevity in the first place? What was so unique about that triggered your sense of curiosity?
So joined the army at the age of 17, and obviously remaining fit and healthy is not an option. To not remain fit and healthy is not an option. So you eat fairly healthily and you exercise pretty much every day, to the extent where if there's nothing to do on the weekend, you go for a run, or you just, it's just part of the lifestyle. So I left the army at the age of 41 and went straight to the Middle East, to Abu Dhabi, and took up a similar role as an advisor to their military, an element of their military organization. Carried on exercising as often as I could, eating meals, good quality food. Then I noticed at about the age 50 that I was going to the gym 5 days a week and also training on a Saturday and a Sunday, going for a bike ride or going for a run. And I was doing all that just to maintain my weight. But my weight was actually going up ever so gradually. And it didn't matter what I did, I would continue to gain weight. So I then started to research what could be the reason for that. And it's that kind of going away from the mainstream of what doctors and MDs tell you, who are paid and bought and paid for by Big Pharma. The American food pyramid at the bottom is all cereals and bread. And it's not till you get to the top, the small bit of the top, that it's animal products. So there was a number of YouTubers. I did an awful lot of research on YouTube. People like Dr. Eric Berg. There's a guy called Sean Baker, Thomas DeLauer. They all talked about the way that as you get older, the food that you put into your system spikes your insulin. Insulin is also known as the fat hormone. So if you eat carbohydrates and you don't turn that carbohydrate energy, or you don't burn that carbohydrate energy off in exercise, then the body stores that as fat for the future. Because in the old days, prehistoric times, food wasn't always available. So you ate as much as you could. And then in the lean times, your body could go back and start to use your stores. But obviously, because we eat three meals a day, our stores never get depleted. So another thing I learned was that if I eat three meals a day, if I eat breakfast at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm spiking my insulin and I'm loading myself up with fuel for the day. If I eat my last meal at 8 o'clock at night, by the time I come around to eat at 8 o'clock in the morning, I haven't burnt off everything that I've eaten the day before. So that's one of the reasons I was putting on weight. The other thing as well was the logic, or the information that was being passed on by American Heart Association, American Diabetes Association, and the like side companies in the UK, was you eat a low fat diet and high carbohydrates, because if you eat fat, it makes you fat. And it's literally everything that you've been told by the mainstream media, your MDs, what you've learned from listening to people like Dr. Oz on television. You had to flip that completely on its head. And that's where I started to learn about the keto diet and zero carb diets. So I thought, right, what I'll do is I'll try the keto for a while to see if that works. And it did. So I went keto for probably about 6 weeks and lost. I went back down from about a 38 inch waist. I went down to about a 32 inch waist in about 2 or 3 months. The only problem with it is it's so restrictive that I couldn't maintain it. So I started to add carbohydrates, but this time carbohydrates by way of vegetables, like cruciferous vegetables, because they have the lowest marker on the glycemic index.
Yeah, nothing starts.
So exactly, yeah. And also to go away from things like drinking orange juice, because another thing that I learned was, if you, regardless of what God you believe in, when whoever that person is created nature and gave you the apple, that's how you were supposed to eat it. So every time you move a step away from the whole food, you're then processing it, which means your body has to work harder to process that food, which means it's not using energy for rebuilding your body.
Mm-hmm. On that point, about the juice that you yourself make, as in you get the whole fruit, and we're not talking about processes of like pasteurization and things like that. You would get it, say, like the shop or something. I mean, you buy the orange, you squeeze the orange goes in the glass, you get some of the pulp and everything else in the drink itself. What's the difference there, or do you know?
Yeah, so you're taking it one step away from what it was supposed to be.
I see.
The reason that you eat the whole food is that the fiber is part of that. So if you squeeze an orange juice, the juice that comes out when you drink that, your body doesn't know it's orange juice. It just knows that it's sugar water. So the body has much the same response to freshly squeezed orange juice as it does to Coca-Cola, because it's just sugar water. Okay. Whereas if you eat, because imagine if another thing that was explained when I was doing all this research was, try and eat 12 apples. You can't, because the fiber will fill you up and stop you eating.
Yeah,
but
I'd
you can
sick.
Get, yeah, you could get 12 apples. You could put them into a juicing machine and you can drink 12 apples worth of juice. But then you've got 12 apples worth of sugar going straight into your system, spiking your insulin, which if you don't burn it off, is going to be stored as fat.
I try to do, you know, some of these things you're talking about, I try to live as healthy as I can. You know, I'm in the gym 6 days a week, maybe not every single week. Sometimes I'll take a little break here and there because, you know, your body has to just kind of readjust and reset itself. So I try to do things as cleanly as possible. I don't eat any of the processed foods, none of that stuff. I haven't done any of that in years. And I try to stick to the whole food, with the exception of occasionally, for some of the supplements that I have to take, there is one supplement that I have to take. I take a vitamin C powder. So it's not the actual, like the capsule or the tablet or whatever. It's the actual powder, because I found that actually gets absorbed into your system better than the actual caplet does. So
okay.
The vitamin C powder actually works for me, but in order for me to absorb that properly, I have to use at least 8 ounces of, you know, using the Imperial measurement system, I have to use at least 8 ounces of some kind of juice to be able to mix that with. If I mix it with water, it doesn't absorb correctly. So I have to do it with some kind of juice, but I try to stay away from like the processed juices and stuff. And I stay to the natural, you know, the ones. I try to just do it myself. I've got a juicer, but
is it because they recommend the powder is water soluble, so you have to mix it with something that's water.
It is
you
water soluble.
You couldn't mix it in with water.
But
you couldn't
mix it in with water. If I mix it with water, it doesn't break down as it does in any kind of juice. So it's not you can still see like the granules and stuff in there. I don't get the absorption with water as I do with the juice. I don't know if it's the citric acid that causes the way for it to emulsify or whatever, but it just doesn't absorb the same with water.
It's because bioavailability is what you talk about. It's interesting that lots of things have to be taken a certain way to become more bioavailable for the body. So creatine, for example, is water soluble, but some people, you can put it in coffee as well, but some people just, they call it raw dogging. They just put the powder straight in their mouth. And if it's under their tongue, then it becomes what they call sublingual and gets absorbed into your body that way. So I don't know if you could try that.
I'll try that with vitamin C. The amount that I take, I can't mention dosages here because that's different for everybody. But I found a combination that works for me just to maintain. If I get sick, obviously I'll increase that dose, but I need to go through and give you a list of all the supplements I'm on. I forgot to do that in prep. I wasn't even thinking about it. But I found a combination. I've done a lot of my own research, and I found a combination of food, drink. I drink mostly water. I mean, I don't drink really anything else. But that in combination of specific supplements and specific doses for specific reasons. And I do as much exercise as I can. And I feel and look better than I felt and looked 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So I must be doing something right, is all I could say to myself.
The other thing is people become they become zealous about it. So you could say, you could make a video on YouTube and say, I'm fasting now, I don't do this, I don't do that. And then someone says, well, if you clean your teeth in the morning, you're breaking your fast, which is beyond ridiculous. So it may just be that if the only way to get that, or the best way to get that vitamin C into your body, is to mix it into orange juice, one glass of orange juice a day or however often you take it, it's not going to kill you. Yeah. So it's, yeah. If it's
like this much, you know, just enough to cover like the bottom of the glass and maybe a quarter of the way up, I top it off with water.
Yeah. Because there's also people that say that, the Pareto principle of 80-20, you could eat as clean as you want, but there's nothing wrong with having a pizza every now and again or going for McDonald's every now and again. It's when you do that religiously every day, that's when your body's fighting then to process it. And I tell you what I found was, when I moved to Whole Food, we used to have pizza night on a Thursday when we lived in Abu Dhabi, and it would come in and I'd open the box and the smell just didn't smell like food, and I would actually feel quite ill. And then I wouldn't force myself, but I'd eat a couple of slices of pizza and then I'd have a glass of Diet Coke, because we were all eating that and watching TV. The next day I felt like shit, because once you start eating whole food, you start to listen to your body a lot more. And I knew that eating pizza and drinking Diet Coke on a Thursday, Friday was a work day, going to work and then going to the gym on a Friday, I knew I was not going to be able to not fare well at all.
I have a similar story. I went to a specific place here. There's a it's an American place, and they specifically do like American foods and all kinds of stuff, burgers and chicken wings and all that stuff, nachos and whatever else. And so looked at the menu and thought, hey, you know, this is, see how they do American food here. Let's see it. And I went there, and it was just like, you know, America had the fried onion rings, the fried pickles, the chicken wings, the nachos, and I had a Philly cheesesteak sandwich, and it was all really good. You know, potato wedges, chips, as you call them. And I had everything that was a normal, typical going out to an American diner experience kind of thing. And yeah. I even had an apple pie milkshake for dessert. Now, as cleanly as I eat, and I drank water during the whole meal, as cleanly as I eat, and as much as I'm into my own fitness and everything else, the next day I felt so bad. I mean, I woke up and I felt like I was ready to just kill somebody or something that was just standing there in my way.
Yeah.
As in, I felt in my mind, I was just angry and I didn't even know why. Mm. And I called Marty and I said, I feel really terrible because we were supposed to do a podcast later that day. I said, there's just no way I can do this. I don't have the right frame of mind or anything. And he says, what's going on? And I told him everything. And he says, you know what you've done? He says, you've put diesel fuel into a petrol powered vehicle is what you've done.
Yeah.
He says, you've got to clean yourself up and reset. You've got to start, you know, fresh. And it took me about 3 or 4 days to actually get over how bad I felt.
Yeah. Because people do that all the time. It's like dropping the frog into boiling water. Because you're doing that to your body all the time, you're feeling like shit is what people feel like all the time. They get home after a day's work and then they just sleep for 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon because their body is so busy trying to process all that crap. You can't be functioning as a normal human being. Because one of the things I noticed was I used to, in the UAE, we were quite lucky. I think we start work at like 7 o'clock and we finish at 2 in the afternoon. And then I would jump in the car, go straight to the gym, train, and then go home. Sometimes I would forget my PT kit. So I'd go, this is when I was eating crap food. I'd go home and then even mentally, I'd be like, oh, well, I'll have half an hour on the sofa and I'll watch a bit of TV. I'll wake up at 5 o'clock and then just not want to go to the gym. Once I started eating cleanly, I don't think I've napped in the afternoon because I wear the fitness tracker that tracks my sleep. And one of the metrics it says is napping. And I know that I go to bed at 10, 9:30, 10 o'clock. I'm asleep by 10:15. Sometimes I wake up for a pee at about 4:30, 5 o'clock, and then I go back to sleep. And then at 6 o'clock, I get up. And on my sleep chart, that's the only time I'm sleeping the rest of the day. And it used to be nice when we had a daughter. She's 6 now. We used to lie on the sofa and we'd watch Cocomelon or whatever I used to fall asleep. And that was quite nice. Have a little nap in the afternoon. My daughter, you know, cuddling, watching TV. I can't do that now. We lay on the sofa and we watch whatever, AFMAU or whatever she wants to watch. And I'm wide awake. I can't go to sleep, which is a good thing. I'd like to have a little snooze and, you know, lie next to her, but I just can't do it now because I'm eating healthily. And my body, when I go to bed at 9 or 10, it's rebuilding all it needs to do at night. So when I wake up at 6, I'm good to go.
The monitor you're wearing there on your wrist, that's like a Fitbit kind of thing, or is it like a smartwatch?
This is probably going to flick you off the deep end. This is actually a Chinese.
Oh, no. No. It's, all right. Well, you are in Asia, so I'll forgive that one. So
it's a Mi Band.
Mi Band. Okay. So anyway.
Yeah.
The importance of wearing one of these things. I don't get into all this stuff, but again, I understand why you're doing it. How does that benefit you and everything that it does? I know you've mentioned it a couple of times here before, but all the benefits of it. So everything that you're able to track and compare this to your own charts and medical evaluations and things, because we're going to get into the biological and chronological thing, because I found that fascinating. Mm. But that device also helps you measure all of that to put in comparison to that particular part of your longevity experiment.
So although I've got the fitness band, and that's all this really is a fitness band. On my finger, I've got, this is not a...
I thought that was like a wedding ring or something.
No, it's... So this is a plastic blank. This is the one that you wear to find out what size you want to wear, what finger you want to put it on.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then I've ordered it. It's arriving soon. And then there's a ring that you wear that takes all the same biological data. Mm-hmm. It's not biometric data, sorry.
Biometric, yeah.
But the app that comes with this is more of a health and wellness app. So it tells you when you're recovered, if you should sleep longer, if you're sleeping enough, whereas this test tells you what you've done. The rings are, and there's a one called a Whoop, which is similar to the ring. They're more of a lifestyle. You need to sleep more. You need to change your diet because your body's not recovering after exercise. It tells you if you've got a very vigorous day of exercise planned the next day, it'll tell you whether or not you should be doing that because your body's not fully recovered. The fitness tracker I've got, which I've had this probably of the 5 years I've been doing my experiment, I've had this for maybe 3 or 4. all it does is it just takes out the guesswork, because people who comment on the channel, when I say I show my sleep stats, sleeping between 7 and 9 hours a night, about an hour to an hour and a half of deep sleep, my REM sleep, my REM sleep, it tells me everything. Whereas when I speak to people on they say, oh, I don't need that because I get a good night's sleep. I go to sleep at 10, I wake up at 6 and I'm fine. But you don't know how good the sleep is and whether or not you've woken up during the night. Whereas this will tell me I had 7 hours sleep, I had 1 hour 30 of deep and 55 minutes of REM sleep. And then it you can compare that to every day. So to the extent where I did an experiment to see what I ate and when I ate, if it would affect my deep sleep, to the extent where if I drank a glass of wine at 7 o'clock, would it affect my deep sleep? And then 2 or 3 days to get out of my system, I drink a glass of wine at 8 and it would affect my deep sleep. So you can kind of work it out that way as well. That's what I found this extremely useful for.
Mm-hmm. The effects of we have a thing here in the West now about alcohol consumption. I think people drink in excess. It's just my opinion. People are entitled to make whatever decisions they want. But excessive alcohol consumption also plays a big part in people's mentality and people's health and wellness. I mean, I mentioned a specific supplement to you one of the first times we talked, and I was told this by someone else who is in the supplement business. I'm not going to say which one or where, but they mentioned PQQ to me, and you said it was a larger version of transresveratrol, which was the red wine extract. And
yes,
you can get that in a concentrated form. But yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, the transresveratrol comes from the skins of red grapes, or the skins of grapes, but is stronger in the red grape. So it does transfer to red wine, but you get the same amount of transresveratrol from red wine as you do from the supplement form. You'd need to be drinking 50, 60 bottles of red wine a day.
So you'd have to be French then.
Transresveratrol, the guy that found that was a guy called David Sinclair, and he used it in mice trials, and he found that although the mice were still obese, when they cut them open at the end, all their organs were still fit and healthy. So it's also hormetic, which means it puts your body under cellular stress, not psychological stress. And it's that kind of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So it's the same as people who fast. They tend to go into it's stressing their cells, which makes them stronger, because they realize they're under stress, so they become more energized, and they go through the cycle of renewing more often. So transresveratrol, I looked up PQQ when you mentioned it to me. There was another one called CoQ10. It was.
They usually do that in combination. You can get a combination supplement of CoQ10 and PQQ. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to look at that again to find out exactly what the benefits are. But if it's similar to resveratrol, I don't know how much more expensive. The other thing is that the majority of trials that are being conducted in things like trans resveratrol, CoQ10, are done in animals, usually mice, because it's easier to see the effects over someone's lifetime, because obviously a mouse only lives for 3 or 4 years. So, and because they interbreed the mice, if you've got 10 mice in the placebo group, 10 mice in the group that's going to take the drug, and 10 in the control group, they're like twins. So you're getting, there's no change biologically. It's impossible to test longevity type drugs in human beings, because it would take generations, which is hundreds of years. So we have to rely on animal studies, and mice are a lot closer to humans than most people would think. The other thing we can rely on, or not rely on, but the other thing we use is epidemiological studies. But that's usually questionnaires. They're open to all kinds of bias, usually by the people that take part in the studies, because they don't want to, they'll lie to make themselves look good. But also you have doctors. Say there's a vegan doctor who's doing a study on whole food vegan diets. He'll question 100 people, and then it's the way that they write the questions and the way that they present the data is then going to make people think, oh, well, the vegan diet's more healthy. There was one that just got published out of Harvard, in fact, because the professor in charge of it is a vegan advocate. And the headline of the study was red meat causes cancer. When you drill down into the questions, when you say to someone red meat causes cancer, they think steak on a plate. When you actually read the questions, what constituted red meat was sandwiches, which is full of bread. And the meat that's inside the sandwich could be processed meat, which that then it's not whole food. And I think another one was lasagna. So you could have the beef of the lasagna, but then you've got all the sauces and you've got the pasta. That's all carbohydrates. That's all things that if you're eating all that processed food, those are the things that will cause cancer in years to come. Plus there's the confounding factors that don't always get included, things like lifestyle. So yes, I ate red meat all my life, but then I drank half a bottle of whiskey every night and I smoked 60 cigarettes a day. But if they don't bring that out in the questionnaire, it's sometimes overlooked.
Yeah, and it's not going to be, if you take it from your last example, it's not going to be the red meat that kills you in that case.
Exactly, yeah.
I was unaware. I had increased my D3 levels. I was kind of vaguely mentioning this last week when myself and another one of the guys were talking, and I had a health problem. I'm not going to say exactly what it is what I did to, you know, because again, everyone has to take whatever they feel is right for themselves in order to be able to treat themselves. And
yep.
I had increased my D3 level. I increased it by 150% just to see what it would do. And within 24 hours, whatever I had, the issue that I had started to subside. And within 48 hours, there was no sign of it. And I've never seen it again.
Yeah, I can believe that.
And it was just, I'm not getting too personal. It was just like it was almost like a shingles, but it was on like my arm and the side of my chest. It was almost like a shingles outbreak. And I'd never seen it before. And I thought, okay, well, something's wrong here. And I kicked my D3 levels up, gone. In no time flat. And you had said that D3 is actually a hormone.
It's a hormone, yes. Not a
vitamin. And I didn't know that. I did not know that.
It's responsible for about 3,000 biological processes in the body. And one of the major groups that it supports is autoimmune conditions, autoimmune function. So if you've got a shingles type problem, that's an autoimmune disease, like skin diseases, like eczema.
Yeah, it was just like that. Like a dry skin kind of thing, but it was just a small, tiny little like spot on like my arm, like right in here across my shoulder and chest. And I thought, what on earth is that? And I thought I was going to have to call the dermatologist, but I thought, okay, well, I'll just, you know, I popped some more D3 and gone. Mm. I couldn't believe it.
What would be interesting is if you go and get a blood test and see what your natural D3 levels are. Because it's a hormone. If you're a fit and healthy gentleman, as you are, your testosterone levels, if they drop below 300, then you're a candidate for testosterone replacement therapy, TRT. And any man who goes below 300 would see the doctor. The doctor would start him on it straight away because it's a hormone, it's important. But no one pays the same attention to vitamin D levels, and they control, so like I say, 3,000 biological processes, and a lot of them are to do with immune function. So there's studies that have come out, retrospective studies that have come out, showing that people that had, and again, this is epidemiological, people who had D3 ranges that were in the normal range and then contracted the disease that we can't talk about because it shut countries down for years, they fared a lot better than people who had lower vitamin D3 levels because they couldn't fight off the viruses that they had. Also, you produce vitamin, you can get D3 from some animal products, but the main way that the human body produces or synthesizes D3 is the sun. And what they found was people who had left countries like Somalia and Ethiopia and had moved to countries like Denmark and Sweden, when COVID hit, there were lots of people in those communities dying because they're darker, colder climates. So their bodies weren't absorbing anywhere near the amount of sunlight they should have been. And their D3 levels were also seen to be a lot lower. But you should, just for peace of mind, and it's not an expensive test, just see how much your vitamin D3 levels are normally.
Yeah, well, I can tell you right now that the results, without even going through that process, I can tell you right now that any doctor here is going to tell me that they are too high, because I know someone that is a licensed nutritionist, okay, and I consult with them. Mm-hmm. They do the best that they can for me, but I'm beyond kind of what they can recommend. They're basically recommending things to someone that is of the type we were talking about, that just does basically nothing and eats junk and all that stuff. I'm a very active person, and I kind of need, you know, a little bit higher levels. And no disrespect to this person. They are great in the recommendations that they make, but most of these products, and we'll talk about this in just a second, are just crammed full of just soy filler. And it's a mess, but we'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. The D3 levels by European standards are different than the D3 levels or even the nutritional levels that are recommended by the US standards. These are two different measures. I've never figured out why that is. I don't know. Maybe you do. But this person that takes a lot less D3, obviously, forgot to mention, you better take that with K2. Don't forget the K2.
Yeah. You must take K2 with it.
Yeah, you got to take K2 with it. But this person that takes... K2. Yeah, this person that takes the D3, and it's a lot lower level than I did. They went and they had a blood test, and the doctor from two different GPs, and they were screaming, "Oh my goodness, you've got to get these levels down. This is too high." So I'm assuming that I'm going to get the same result.
So the NIH in America, I think the levels they talk about is 30, and I'm not sure of the measurement. It's nanograms per deciliter, but it's 30 and below is insufficient. Between 30 and 80 is sufficient, and anything over 80 towards 100 is classed as toxic.
Yes, too much D3 is toxic. And to that point, I forgot I had this. I have a paper right here.
Yeah,
that came out. This was done by three German scientists from three different universities and medical research centers here. The university in Heidelberg, university in Tübingen, and the International University of Applied Sciences in Erfurt, Germany. The title of this paper is called COVID-19 Mortality Risk Correlates Inversely with Vitamin D3 Status and a mortality rate close to zero could theoretically be achieved at a 50 nanograms per milliliter, according to this paper.
That's the middle of the sufficient range.
Yeah. Yep. And it says basically, and this was done during all of the talk of like lockdowns and vaccines and mandates and everything else.
Yeah.
And people like this were ignored. These papers were not allowed to be pushed out in any way, shape or form in the mainstream.
Yeah. There's been I think I've done two videos about two or three different studies, retrospective studies, that said those people whose vitamin D levels were in the sufficient range fared a lot better than those who were insufficient and caught COVID. And then
I think if mine had been higher, I would have been a little bit better off. I had COVID and it was pretty bad. I had it for about a week. And I think if I had kicked my D3 levels up to where I am now, I probably would have fared a little bit better.
I got COVID twice. Both times, obviously, I was a good 2 years into my experiment, and my vitamin D levels are normally 76, between 60 and 70. I've gone over 80 a couple of times. The first COVID I got was the Delta variant, which is allegedly not as bad as the first one that came out, but was bad. I lost my sense of taste and my sense of smell. I had a sore throat and I had a temperature, and I took two paracetamol tablets, 8 o'clock in the morning, two again at midday, two at 4 in the afternoon, and two at 8 at night. And I had Strepsils, which are the throat lozenges. And I ate those, and I was completely clear of it within about 3 or 4 days. And other people that I know had the same Delta variant were sick for 2 or 3 weeks and were bedridden. And I was fine. It was and the second one I got, which is the Omicron one.
Yeah,
I've had worse hangovers.
Very mild.
Not streaming eyes, but my eyes were very watery, and a nose. My nose is running, and I just got antihistamine tablets, generic antihistamine tablets. When I was here in the Philippines, I popped one in the morning, one at lunchtime, one at night, and that was gone within about 2 or 3 days. Hmm. And I'd seen other people who were, I don't know what their vitamin D levels were, but they were just, you know, it knocked them sideways for a good week or two again.
Yeah. The effects of this processed soy that we see everywhere. I was unaware until I was speaking with another person that deals in health and nutrition supplements and things like that in the States. They had explained to me that a lot of this, because companies will use this as like a filler for things because it's cheap and it's easy.
Yes.
And it's
Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff is the fact that it's soy, it's also genetically modified that they'll throw into this stuff. And it's the hidden kind of just filler ingredient that is not really needed. And our bodies cannot process it correctly. It breaks it down into a form of estrogen, doesn't it?
Yep. And that's the other thing that I started doing once I got into this, start eating whole foods, was I started reading the labels on food packages
Yep.
and looking for... There's something like 80 different ways they write the word sugar. So you've got sugar.
That I didn't know. But
and
that's
you go into the ingredients and there's dextrose and there's, like I say, there's 80 different ways they can say sugar. And I started to read what was on the ingredients labels and then work out what it was and whether or not it could be processed. And I pick my wife up about it all the time when I say, she says, oh, I've got this because it's organic. I said, just because it says organic doesn't mean that it's healthy. And then I look at the back label and I go, look, and this is what they do. Is it? I'd say it said sugars, and it says if you look at the supplement label on a package on the far right side, it gives you daily value percentage. So, say for example, it's calcium. It'll say in every 100 grams you get 0.3, which equates to say for example 23% of your daily value. Look at the one for sugar. They don't write it because literally anything you have, you're going to be over your daily allowance if you take 2 or 3 teaspoons of it, and that's because big sugar, like big tobacco, fought the government in America to make sure that they didn't put that on there because it would stop people buying the products. The other thing they do is they say 100 grams and one serving will give you X amount, but then they say one serving is 2 teaspoons. Well, how do you work out what 2 teaspoons is or fluid ounces? You can't. It's not like for like. That's the thing that's confusing for people. So yeah, you have to read food labels.
Yeah, well, and they're doing everything they can now to have those labels removed. The food companies and the processors are now trying to have that. And we've seen this on state ballot initiatives over the course of, I think, the last 10 years. And it's to remove the ingredients, to remove the nutrition labels and everything else. Yeah. And it's like, don't you want to know what you're eating? Do you not care what you're putting in your body? And
you do, but they don't. Because as long as you're sick, you're going to keep eating the food, and Big Pharma are going to benefit because they will find a pill to make you feel slightly better.
Mm-hmm. And to your point there about the organic food, the last time I was in the States, and Europeans, they kind of, as you know, they kind of have the food on a little bit better standard. Mm-hmm. You can find the processed stuff here, and it's starting to creep its way in a little bit more, but it's not as bad as the U.S., nowhere near it. But the last time I was in the States, it was pre-COVID. I haven't been back since. And I remember I went to one of the supermarkets with a family member, and I'm trying to find something that I can eat that is not processed because I'm used to eating the clean whole foods in Europe. And then I go to the US and it's almost like I'm starving myself while I'm there because I just can't eat anything because I will literally be sick. Yeah. And this person says, oh, well, you can check down here. These are the two aisles where they have the organic stuff. And I said, oh, okay. So I walked down both of those aisles and I come out and they said, did you find anything? And I said, I didn't see any organic food. All of that is just like frozen processed junk. All of it is. Yeah. But it's just labeled organic at the top.
Yeah, because people think organic is healthy. The other giveaway as well when you go grocery shopping is if you're walking down an aisle, you're in the wrong place. When you go into a supermarket, you need to stick to the outside because the stuff that's in the middle that's difficult to repack the shelves, that's all the processed crap that's got a 2-year shelf life. The fresh fruit, the vegetables, the water, the fresh meats, they're all on the outside because they get delivered and it's easier to restock all of those areas of the supermarket. So don't go into the middle of the supermarket because that's where all the crap is.
There are some things that I have a guilty pleasure for, such as peanut butter. I like peanut butter. And I look at it for the protein content. I try not to eat too much of it. And the same thing with honey. I do about 2 grams of honey. I will put that into like a high fat yogurt every day. So I'll do like a very high fat yogurt and I'll throw a whole bunch of fruit and everything in there. But I throw the honey in there to just kind of make it a little bit more palatable. But a lot of people are getting away from these and it's natural honey. It's from real bees, not this sugar, you know, junk that they stick in the stores, because that's what a lot of it is. Actually, we don't produce enough honey to be able to supply the actual demand. So the companies will actually just make something that's just like a sugar substitute and they'll call it honey and stick it on the shelf. Yeah. But a lot of people switch to these alternatives, like these stevia, whatever. And I've had recipes and desserts and things with that stuff, and I don't care for that stuff at all.
No, it's if you've got a sweet addiction, if you've got a sugar addiction, it may be a way to wean yourself off, but it's not a replacement. And that's what people want. Because again, I've seen studies where they say if you take cocaine or you eat sugar, it lights up the same area of the brain. It's the reward area. So the reason that people feel bad when they switch from the standard American diet, which is aptly named SAD, to say a whole food diet, they go through withdrawal of the sugar, and then they're always craving sugar in the same way as an addict is always craving cocaine, and they physically got to stop themselves from taking it.
I cannot imagine going back to the way that I was before. Like I cannot go to the way that I was eating, the way that I was living. I just cannot do it anymore. And I said to you in one of the first conversations that that we had when we were actually just doing a wrap up, and it was just a private conversation. And I said to you, I said, whoever I was back then, that person's dead. They're just that is, and that's not going to come back. And I cannot imagine going back to that. The way that I was that I was living, because everything works in that lifestyle. You know, you have your food, your entertainment, and that's what they just do. It's like anesthetizing you to just everything else that's going on in the world through all of that stuff. Yeah. The alcohol consumption, I mean, I drink absolutely nothing. I haven't touched alcohol in years. Obviously, no tobacco products, no drugs, nothing like that. I do not take an actual over-the-counter drug unless it is absolutely necessary, such as like paracetamol or something. If I have a really high fever and I need to break it and it just will not stop, then I will take that. Yeah. You know, that's okay. But as far as anything else, or if I have a serious problem and I need like antibiotics or something, you know, an infection or something, then of course. But I stay away from all of that stuff, all the things that we're sitting here and we're talking about, all the bad stuff. I've basically, except for the yogurt that I put into my diet, I've cut out dairy altogether almost. And I put a splash of milk in my coffee every morning. I only have one cup, but I don't even mess with dairy anymore. I've cut all that out completely. And I feel so much better staying away from just the processed stuff and getting into the I don't even, when I eat steak, I've got a 16 ounce flank in my fridge that I'm gonna throw in the cast iron pan later. Yeah. And
nice.
Yeah. And it's 100% grass-fed, organic, no treatments of any kind of antibiotics or anything. And I cannot imagine going back. I just can't do it. Once you get to that point, you just, you know, and you take it a step further with everything you do, and I respect you for it. But there's no way I can go back. And once people stand up and take control of their own health and their own lives, that's going to put them in a better place, a much better place, especially in the world that we're living in now.
You have to become, I think, I forget, there's a good YouTube channel called Low Carb Down Under, where they're into low carb, whole fat, ketogenic, carnivore type lifestyles. Dr. Ali, someone. And he says exactly that. You've got to become what he calls a citizen scientist, where you do an experiment. It's called N of One, where the only normal studies have got like three groups. They've got the control group, they've got the placebo, and they've got the group that's going through. And they could be N of 40 because they split 40 people. N of one just means there's one person, which is what I'm doing. And if you do it for long enough, a human trial N of one has actually got more valuable data, as I gather data as the years go by, than if you have an N of 20 for 2 weeks with guys who are between the age of 20 and 30, because they're young and fit and healthy, as opposed to when you talk about longevity type supplements or supplements that are going to make your lifestyle better and improve your health span. It's not going to affect them. You don't start to really, if you're eating and living healthily, you don't start to contract the diseases of aging until your late 50s, early 60s. That's when diabetes and dementia, those things start to creep in. So if you're testing 40 people on a longevity drug or some other kind of protocol, and they're in their 20s, they're young, fit and healthy, because you need to be healthy to go on to a scientific study, it kind of defeats the object. You're saying that young, fit and healthy people who've got nothing wrong with them take this and there's no adverse effects. Well, of course.
They're very healthy. Yeah. So yeah. They're going to be less likely to have them. Yeah.
To go back quickly to what you said about soy, it does do something to increase estrogen in people. You get the soy boy comments where people have been eating lots of soy lattes and things like that, and the men are turning into ladies. There's a supplement I take called DIM, D-I-M. I can't pronounce what it stands for, the full name. All it is crushed down cruciferous vegetables. What that does is when we're young, fit and healthy for men, our testosterone level is quite high and our estrogen level is low, and women are the other way around. As you get older, our testosterone drops, but our estrogen increases. This DIM supplement I take puts that balance back, where it knocks estrogen down and allows your testosterone to rise and frees up the free testosterone, which is the one that can be used by the body. So if you get a vitamin D test, get a testosterone test as well and estrogen. And the test you look for is estradiol. 40 is the top end. So you shouldn't be higher than 40 for estrogen. I was 41. I took 600 milligrams in three 200 milligram doses a day for 3 months. So the next time I got my test done, I'd gone from 41 down to something like 20 and felt a lot better. And also, estrogen is one of these ones that packs on the fat around your waist. And I noticed that I did lose a little bit of weight, fat around my waist after I started taking this DIM supplement to realign my estrogen levels.
Well, closing out here, it's been a great conversation. I love talking about this stuff, and I'm looking forward to future conversations about it. What would you recommend to somebody who is just starting out, who wants to actually change something in their life, and they don't know where to start?
So the first thing to do, I've got these unofficial pillars of longevity, which is number one is nutrition. So you must get your diet dialed in. Now, it doesn't matter if you on one end want to be carnivore, on the other end want to be vegan. What you have got to do is cut out all the processed foods. So get your nutrition done. Once you've got nutrition done, you need to be exercising regularly. Then you need to make sure that your sleep is optimal and also reducing stress levels. So meditate if you can, or the Wim Hof breathing techniques. Once you've got all that done, then go and see a doctor and get a complete blood count. Get as many blood tests done as you can to see what's within range and what's without a range, or out of range. If you can then change those ever so slightly with diet and lifestyle changes, then do that. If you do that and they're still not within reference range, then you can start looking at supplementation. So it's make sure that your lifestyle and don't start a supplement regime until you've got your nutrition dialed in, you've got your exercise protocol done, because you'll probably get incorrect data. And the reason that things are looking better is not because of the supplements you're taking, it's because you're now going to bed at 10 o'clock at night and the alarm isn't waking you up at 6 because you're used to going to bed at 11:30 or 12 and the alarm waking you up at 6 and you're tired. So there's lots to do before you actually start the supplement. There's lots you can do. Yeah, I think David Sinclair said you can add 10 years to your life just by doing that, just by eating healthily, exercising regularly, sleeping correctly, and trying to reduce or eliminate as much stress from your life as you can. But the main thing, and that's why I wear the tracker and I get the blood test done, is I'm not guessing anymore. So I'll go to bed at 10, I'll wake up at 6. Later on that day, I look at my sleep score and I'll say, okay, so I had a good night's sleep. Or I feel fine, I get my blood test back and my creatinine levels were through the roof because I was taking creatine as a supplement and I was eating too much red meat. So that affects your kidney function. So I then knew I needed to dial back on the creatine supplementation or not eat as much red meat. So like I said, it takes the guessing out of it.
And just out of curiosity, because I've not asked you this yet, how much are you training now? Like how much are you doing in like the gym or your personal exercise at home or whatever?
So Monday, it's much better now that I've semi-retired. So Monday morning, wake up at 6, I walk the dog for half an hour and I get in about 2,000 steps, which is a good start of the day. Take the kids to school. On the way back, I'll stop in. On Monday, I'll stop in at the gym, probably 40 to 50 minutes lifting weights. Tuesday, I've got a small rucksack and I do a 40-minute ruck run where I get my heart rate up into the aerobic, anaerobic, sometimes into VO2 max. Wednesday, back in the gym. Thursday's the day off. Friday, back in the gym. Saturday, then I go for about an hour and 5-hour and 10-minute bike ride where I'm in aerobic for probably a good 50 or 60 minutes of that. That's really all the fitness that I do. And then I walk the dog in the evening. So another sort of 1,500, 2,000 steps in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a well-rounded fitness routine.
Yeah, yeah. And once you get into that, you feel the benefit. You feel the... And my food now, I'm one meal a day for pretty much 4 or 5 days of the week. So I'll wake up in the morning. When I do my fitness, it's all fasted. I'll drink black coffee for maybe from 9 in the morning till about 1 in the afternoon. I'll have 3 or 4 cups of coffee, just to any hunger pangs I used to get. Now I don't, because I'm used to that. In the afternoon, chamomile tea, green tea. And then between sort of 5 and 7 at night, I'll have a massive meal where I get all the nutrients I need and all the calories. And it's a lot easier then, because if we go to the city and we go to a restaurant, I'll just have a cup of coffee because I know that 90% of the food that's on the menu is going to be cooked in seed oil, vegetable oils. It's going to be highly processed crap. So I don't fall into that trap.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier just to eat at home.
Well, it has been a great conversation. I'll see you. We'll set something up for next week, hopefully. Yeah, if you're available.
Are we still on for tomorrow for the normal
three-header? Yeah, absolutely. We're on for regular time tomorrow. We can talk about that as soon as we finish up here. But Marty will be here. I did speak to him on the phone earlier as he was on his way out the door to do a bit of shopping. And I hope that he is sitting down, listening to every word that you said, taking notes on everything.
I hope so, too.
I hope so, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Next Wednesday, if you want. If not, any other time, absolutely. I'm happy to talk about this forever.
Absolutely. So am I. Well, we will go ahead and call this one done. It's been a great conversation, my friend. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone. Have a great evening.
Take care, John.